Now to announce our main speaker for the night, Laura S. from Orchid. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Laura, and I am an alcoholic. Laura. Let's see. Thanks, Joseph, a lot for and just for saying, like, oh, it's really hard to be up here. And then here's Laura. You know, I think when Joseph asked me, I was like, I did that stare. And in my mind, I was thinking, like, are you serious? And all these things started going, and my sponsor was behind me. And she was like, she knew what she was like. She was walking. And I was like, he just asked me. And I'm like, all this, I was doing like the fight or flight. And my body was like, yeah, because I know I have to do these sorts of things because I love listening. Amanda did a great job. I love listening to people's stories. So I have to give mine as well. And in there, I said, well, I just spoke. And he was like, well, when? And I was like, oh, just like in February. And he was like doing the counting thing, you know, like, yeah, it's like 2 months ago, Laura, like, you can speak again. And then my sponsor goes, well, what day and what time? And I said, and he said Monday. And I go, oh, thank God I have. And I said that. Thank God that I have a meeting at my house at 7 p.m. so I can't make it. He goes, it's 5:30 to 6:30. And I was like, I don't think I'm going to have time. And my sponsor says, don't you have a secretary that can open the meeting? I'm like, okay. I'll do it. So she strongly suggested I do this, and that's what I'm doing. Sobriety date is February 23rd, 2015. That's for you guys doing math right now. That's 3 years and a couple months. The other day I was in a meeting, and we kind of spoke about, like, decades of drinking. I'm in my 40s, and this is the first decade I haven't had a drink in, and that's really cool. Definitely drank in my 30s, definitely drank in my 20s, definitely in my my teenage years, and actually in 0 to 10 years, I also drank then. I remember, I'm the youngest of four kids, and so it was normal, preschool, go get dad a beer. You know, you go and pop it, and what I saw from them was, you know, they shook it up, and I learned how to shake that beer up. Oh, I'll open it for you, Dad. And it would spill, you know, and that's the way it was, you know, and I got that drink right then and there. And I didn't spill, Dad, don't worry. And going out to dinner, you know, drink Mom's margarita, and my mom didn't drink much, but my dad did, and it was normal. It was a total normal thing to see a case of beer being drunk in a day. Wake up in the morning, on the weekends, you do yard work, you drink. It's normal. Go get another beer. Okay, Dad. You know, and that's what I would do. And that, I, you know, I definitely drank in high school. It was normal for me to come home. It was normal for me to come home drunk from a dance, completely wasted, where people would have to, my siblings would have to, they would be waiting for me to help them walking in because they were drunk too. But we were like, we can't help each other, you know? So we would have to sit in the car for like 2 hours throwing up all over our, I mean, it was ridiculous, but this was normal. It was completely normal for me. And thank God, my daughter, she's a senior in high school. She's graduating this year. She's never come home drunk. It's a miracle. It's amazing. I don't know how I got so blessed. Maybe it's because these last few years she hasn't seen me drinking. She knows that it's not normal to drink. Not normal to come home from a weekend and from a dance where that's a huge deal. And then you ruin it by drinking, you know? I didn't even go in to dance. We threw up in the parking lot at dinner, you know? We didn't even make it in. My whole life was preoccupied with alcohol. I never lived in the moment. It was revolved around alcohol. I was enslaved, running my life around my next drink. And it was terrible. The feeling of just people, my family. I thought I was a family person. I love my kids. I think I loved my kids. I know I loved my kids, even in my disease. And that's what it is. It's a disease. I didn't know I was an alcoholic till a few years ago. But I used to think, I'll do anything for my family. I'm a family person. But yet I was drinking. I wasn't there for them. I shared a story with somebody the other day, you know, and I'm totally going to get emotional, probably, I'm going to get emotional during this, and it's going to happen. I hate showing my feelings. I do, but you know what? It's helping me grow. It's helping me grow. Thank you, Billy. I shared this story. I really did think I was a good mother, and this, one of my last endings of drinking, I was, one of my last drinkings, I said, my older two kids, I have three kids, my older two kids were out, they were spending the night at somebody's house. I thought I would, it was a Friday night, I thought I'd mow the lawn, I was married at the time, I thought I'd clean the house, so it would be perfect. I loved barbecuing too, so I got steaks and I barbecued. I set the fire up, you know, like inside, it was all cozy, like perfect in my mind, because that's what I would want to come home to, you know. And then, where are you, honey? He wasn't coming home. Hours later, and it was like, screw it, I'm drinking. You know, and I drank, and I drank, and my son, who was probably 6 or 7 at the time, found me in the bathroom with throw up everywhere and called his father instead of 911, and because he couldn't wake me up, he thought I had died. And that's scary. That's something that is very hard for me to forgive myself. He's going to have to live with that for the rest of his life, and so will I. But my living amends to him is not drinking, being a better mom. And it wasn't always like that, but what's so ironic is what I was craving and wanting, love from my best friend, my spouse, supposedly, I couldn't have it, and I wasn't even giving it to my own child, my own children. You know, what I wanted, I couldn't give. And it's because I hated myself. I did. I hated myself. I felt invisible to the world. I would say horrible things to myself constantly throughout the day. I would never say these things to you guys, but I would say it to me. And that's sad. Once in a while, these things will come back up to me, and I'll start saying, I'm not good enough. I'm not pretty enough. I'm not smart enough. Any inadequacy that I have will start shooting up. And I don't have to believe. I don't have to believe what I think, because once I start thinking, I'm crazy. And it's nice to know that you guys get me, because you're crazy too. It's nice. I didn't know how to stop drinking either. You know, like I said, shared, my father was an alcoholic, but he was a huge high-functioning alcoholic. I mean, he worked at the base, he's an engineer. You know, we had a nice home. We had a nice upbringing. And it wasn't like Pop, like, passed out like I did with throw-up in the bathroom. You know, I didn't see those sorts of things. I've had occasions of certain things seen, but I don't, you know, I don't blame my dad for any of this. I know that I drank alcoholically at a very young age, you know, in high school. My brother got Seagram 7 and 7, and we were going to have a party, and it wasn't enough. It wasn't enough for me. He told me to slow down, and I was a freshman, and he was a senior, and I was thinking, what are you talking about? Slow down? That doesn't make sense to me. And what happens when this bottle is going to be gone? Like, I'm already thinking, and we've only had this much out of the bottle. You know, it was crazy how I drank. I started hiding alcohol. People were counting my drinks. I hated that. I hated the counters. They sucked. You know, don't you think you're having too much? No, fuck you. Oh, my God, one time. I was mad at somebody, and they said something to me, "Don't you think that you put too much wine in that glass?" And I was like, "Screw you." And I had my wine glass and I was going to do this, and I was like, at that moment I was all, and I caught the wine. It's like I didn't even spill. I was like, what was I thinking? Why would I throw wine? That's mine. No. I mean, I was like so impressed with myself too. Like, woo. You know, alcohol compromised my values and my values and my beliefs, and it broke me down. It really did. Which leads me into what happened to me. My last drunk, I think I'm going too fast. I was telling Amanda on the way over here, I was like, take your time, you're the 10-minute speaker, but that doesn't mean that you can't go 25 minutes. And I was like, so nervous on the way over here. When I get nervous, I get really crazy, like really excited and animated. I can't help it. It just happens. And I was like, Amanda, are you nervous? And she's like, no, I'm good. And I was like, can you sponsor me? Like, can you be my sponsor? Like, now I know what my sponsor's talking about. Like, when I help her, you know, when I call her and I help her. And I was like, is this what it's like? I'm like, no, it's not the same. It's when I love my sponsor. She's amazing. But let's go ahead and start talking about my last drunk. I wasn't happy, and I have two normal friends, and they are true friends to me. They saved my life. They are my angels. And I still have them to this day. We get together and I love them. They're like you guys in this program. I can talk to them about anything, and I don't have to feel judged or criticized. What happened that night, I was drinking. Actually, I was going on a 3-day drinking binge. I don't even know when the last time I didn't drink. You know, I drank constantly, every single day, all the time. I would drop my kids off at school and then do work and then run around. And in between that, it was trying to, like, find alcohol so I could hide it in my closet, hide it in the cupboards, hide it in the laundry, hide it anywhere. I started drinking, and I wasn't happy that weekend, because I just wasn't. I didn't feel good about me, and I hated who I was. I didn't care if I lived or I died. I kind of thought, like, it would be better for everybody if I wasn't around, and that's sad. I'm glad that I was able to come in here. I was drinking Friday night, played with my daughter. It felt like, looking back, it felt like I did a last hurrah of day with my daughter, because we had a perfect day, and then she went to go spend the night at somebody's house, and I started drinking again. On the way home after dropping her off, I got some bottles of booze, and I liked our hard alcohol. That was my thing. Vodka and whiskey, that would do the trick for me. And then I would have some wine too to switch it up, but when I drank, I drank to get drunk. That's how I drank all the time. There wasn't any, I mean, I can romance everything, you know, but I knew when I drink, I'm getting drunk, and I couldn't control it. There was no way I could control my alcohol, even having one drink. What happened was Saturday night, I got some alcohol, big bottles, and drank. I was unhappy, and then all of a sudden I passed out, woke up, might have been 12 at midnight, and I was like, what the heck, I don't have any more alcohol, this is going to run out. I drank the rest of the bottles, and I never did drinking and driving. It was a rare occasion for me to do that, but my bright idea is to run to the store, because that's what I did. I could run a mile in like 7 minutes, you know? I timed this stuff because, like, I used to go run to the market to get alcohol because I'd go running, you know, and then that's what I would do. I'd run to 7-Eleven. I'd run to Food Max. I would run, and it was normal for me. That's sick, but that's what I did at midnight. I ran, and I ran so fast because I thought it was going to close. I didn't have the concept of time. I just knew the last time I looked, it was midnight. And so I went out. Nobody knew I left, and I went to Food Max, which is about a mile away or so, and got two huge bottles of vodka and ran home. And when I ran home, I had shoved, like, the bottles in my pants. Walked around. That's how I like hid my alcohol. A lot of the times I would put them down my pants and just walk like this, like nobody could tell. So stupid. So stupid. Nobody knew. I almost said I had these huge jugs. But now you're looking. So I drank that whole bottle, and in the morning I woke up, and I don't know what time I woke up, 6 a.m. or something, and I started drinking again. And by 11 o'clock, I was done with that second bottle. I was going to just, it was Sunday morning, and I went to the restroom, finished that bottle, guzzled it, and then I was just going to go pass out on my bed like I always did, and just crash, just like that. And let me go back for a minute. Before my last finishing that bottle, I was texting some of my two girlfriends, and I remember texting them. The texting was just absolutely spot on, no misspelling. I just told them I was drinking, I was unhappy, and they said they were coming to get me. I told them no, I was really kind of pissed off, and one said that she was out of town, she wasn't going to be able to make it, but can you make it, Alma? And so my friend Alma said she was coming no matter what. Her brother died of alcoholism, and he was in his 30s. So Alma knew it was life and death. She didn't know how much it was life and death that day, though, for me. She was just going to pick me up and take me to her brother's grave and talk to me. That was her plan. What happened was something different. I was going to pass out, like I said, on my bed, and all of a sudden, it was like God, the angels, they lifted me up from my bed, and I was able to walk out my back door of my room, around my house, out the back gate, into the front lawn. And I sat there and I waited for my friend, pissed. And then next thing I know, I woke up in the hospital with tubes down my throat. I had died in my front lawn that morning. And my neighbor had called 911. I woke up. The good news was I was chained to the bed. Because apparently the good news is when you start like struggling, like that's good. They didn't know how long I was going to be out or how long I was out for. I was resuscitated back to life, like I said. And they, you know, somebody the other day asked me if I had brain damage from it. We don't know. I don't know. I forgot who even asked me, you know. So they didn't know if I had brain damage or not, you know. And I'm sure it's, I mean, that's why I fit in with you guys. I mean, we do. We have to. So that was very scary for everybody. My body felt like it died too. I wasn't able to walk for a while. I wasn't able to dress myself. I actually did dress myself in the hospital because I was too embarrassed to ask the nurse to help me when it was time to leave. And she caught me on the ground trying to dress myself. Just putting on a shirt took me hours. And I just couldn't do it. But it was her time to check me. And she found me on the ground. And she's like, what the heck? That's my job. And it was just, it was a humbling experience right then and there. But while I Well, I woke up and I was in there for a few days, a week or so, which wasn't that major compared to some other people that I've heard. I heard people say, well, she's learned her lesson. She probably won't do that again. And what the crazy, insane thought that I had, that I probably will do this again, is what I thought. And that was disgustingly sick, and I knew it. And I knew I was going to do it again unless I got some sort of help. And I couldn't tell anybody that. There was no way I could tell anybody that that's what my thought was. Because they thought, she's done. She's it. That's it. Laura, do this for your kids. And I couldn't do it for my kids. I wanted to. I just couldn't. I didn't know how to stop drinking. You guys taught me. I decided to go to rehab, and I stayed sober for 1 week before they got a bed for me in CRC in Santa Barbara. And I absolutely loved rehab. I didn't have to think. I just got to do. They told me to go to meetings. I felt like I was valedictorian because I did what I was supposed to do in rehab. It felt great, you know. I didn't have to worry about dinner. I didn't have to worry about taking the kid here. I didn't have to worry about taking the other kids here, you know. I didn't have to worry about anything. I could take care of me, which I never had done. And so when I got out, you know, they say you're not supposed to do any major changes the first year of sobriety. I made a major change the second day that I got back. The first day I knew... my husband at the time, I've been married twice and I've been divorced twice. My husband at the time had made all these promises. things are going to be different. This is going to be this. And I got home and nothing was different. There was no action taken. I know I had changed, but nobody else there did. And it's because they're sick too. You know, they lived with a sick mom, a sick wife, a sick person in their household. How did they know how to do anything different? They only knew me as drunk, you know? I didn't care about certain things. I mean, shoot, I was found dead in my front lawn. Thank God that my kids didn't see me, you know? If I hadn't texted my friends that day, I might have been found too late in my bedroom. If the neighbor had been out that day mowing his lawn, I might not have been able to get help from him. And if I hadn't died, I probably wouldn't have truly lived. And that's what alcohol will take me to. It will take me to death. And I was so glad and relieved that I found out that I was an alcoholic. Because I didn't know. I thought it was normal. I knew that I was a little bit more wilder throughout the night than other people. But there were some people that were doing it too. So after I got out of rehab, the second day I decided I'm going to get a divorce. And that's what I did. We tried to do some sort of therapy, but, you know... I felt like I gave 110% trying to help, but there wasn't anybody walking next to me, and I accepted it, and it was fine, you know, and I felt like in order for me to live, if I stay in this relationship and I stay in this household, I'm going to die. I'm going to pick up and drink again, and drinking means death for me. There's no doubt about it. The day I surrendered, I remember that feeling, and I surrender like all the time. I have to. It's not just because I surrendered, but I remember the first time I surrendered, it felt so good. It wasn't up to me anymore. You know, I gave myself to God. Please take this away. Please help me. And I think he knew that because I was so broken. That I was willing to do anything I was willing to do anything. So when I got out of rehab and I started saving up, and I had to live in my house for 6 months in order for me to save up and move out and get a house. And I walked out and got a house at 6 months of my sobriety, and where I currently live right now. And when I moved in, I had no furniture. I walked away from everything, which was fine, because I knew that's what I had to do. That's what I had to do, so it was fine. And I started building up from there. Once I started getting furniture, this overwhelming feeling came to me. And this has happened a few times in my life. And this was so strong, and it was like I needed to start a meeting at my own home. And I listened. And I thought, when I get these feelings, it kept coming to me. When I get these feelings, I have to listen, I have to act. And so that's what I did. And I went to, and there's another women's meeting, her name's Shannon, in this program, and she does it Thursday nights. I talked to her about it, and I had all these questions, all these comments and concerns. And I said, what was it, Shannon? I said, what do you think about, how do you think about your meeting? She goes, she started to talk, and she said, it saved my life. And she goes, what do you need to know? And I said, that's it. That's all I need to know. And I started that meeting. It's been 3 years now. It's been 3 years, and it's been going strong. And thank God for that meeting. At first, I was like, what the heck did I do? Like, I don't want these ladies coming over. And I forgot sometimes they were coming over at Mondays at 7. I was like, fuck. You know? Jeez. And one day somebody shared in the meeting, like, I didn't want to come over here. Like, they were sharing, and I was like, they said they didn't want to come over. And it came to my turn, you know, and I was like, I didn't even want you guys to come over. You think I wanted you here? No, I don't want you here either. And then it was like, but see, you hear that? That's what it's like in the meetings, you know? And that's what it gave me, is like, we're able to cry. We're able to talk about anything and everything, feel accepted, and love and laugh. And it's saved my life. This meeting has saved my life. It's great. Oh, God. I put down dreams here. Because I've been having a lot of bad dreams lately. But I remember when I first got sober and I went to like one of my first meetings, they were talking about dreams. And I said, oh my God, I got the most brilliant idea. Okay, because I had drinking dreams and it was bad, you know, like I always got caught, all this and that. But I remember my dad told me when I was a kid, when you have a bad dream, you can change that in your dream. You can make it go a different way, Laura. And I was like, you can? Yeah, I can make my dream and change it in my mind and dream. And he's like, oh yeah, do it. So I got this brilliant idea, like, I'm going to sleep tonight and I'm going to drink in my dream and I'm going to be fine. You know, I'm going to wake up sober. That's insanity. I tried every imaginable way, even sober, trying to drink in my dreams. I mean, who does that? Who does that? We do that. And so the first night it didn't work. I was in Mexico hiding, and my alcohol and I found in this shack, I was like on the ground trying to pull up floorboards because there was tequila in there that I had hidden, and I was pounding them as fast as I could. You know, this doesn't feel good. And so I woke up and like, that did not work. That sucks, but I could do this better next time. I got this. The next night, I was hiding from my sponsor. I had drunk one beer, and I was like, I went to an AA meeting. And I'm sitting at the AA meeting thinking, I'm not telling anybody. And she's like, oh, you're going to tell them. And I was like, and I look across, and like right there is the girl from my work that I had a resentment on. And I'm eating this huge waffle with biscuits and gravy. And I get up and I start yelling at her, just shoving this in my mouth. The good news is I didn't wake up drunk, but I did have, the bad news is I had this horrible stomach ache. It was terrible. I was like, this is not working. And so like I kind of, that I didn't do that anymore. But dreams now, dreams do help you grow, but I think like talking about the dreams are helping me. Let's see, a few times I did almost go out. I was 6 months. I had just moved into my new home. And I think that what happened was my sponsor was going out of town. Actually, she was out of town. And I remember at my Monday night meeting, which I didn't want anybody to be there that week either. Which anyways, guys, I do want you to come, the women. I'm just saying all these things, but I do honestly really love you being there. I was going through a rough time, and I kind of wanted the idea of a family. I mean, that's what I've always wanted. I want an idea of a family. I want a best friend that's crazy about me and I'm crazy about. And I failed again, is what I thought. Not that I wanted that person that I had, my ex-husband's. It was just that I wanted that and it wasn't coming true. So I thought I was a failure. And at my meeting that night, or the night before, one of the women said, she just happened to share. If anybody is ever feeling like they want to go out, call me. Call me. And that's how we ended the meeting. And I thought, oh, I would call her, you know. And then all of a sudden, the next day, I go through this craziness in my mind. And what happens is what I usually do is get in the car and I go straight to the liquor store when I get upset. And that's what I didn't know I was doing, but I did. And by the time I got to the liquor store, I didn't turn in. I thought, what the heck am I doing? I didn't even know I was doing it. And I just drove straight. And I went to Waller Park, and I was sitting there, and I called her. And I was like, I was hyperventilating. She didn't even know what I was saying. She's like, where are you? I said, Waller Park. And she said, I'll be right there. And okay. I was in the car crying hysterically. Oh, I hate myself. Nobody loves me. I'm the worst. I just wish somebody would hold me. That's what I was thinking, okay? And this is the way God works. And I look up, and there's probably this mob of 20, 25 people holding huge signs from me to you. And they have five different signs, and it says, free hugs, we love you. I can't even make this up. It's so true. And I was like, what? I was like, thank you, God, I am not outside. And I was just like, don't let them see me in my car. And I almost went out, like, 2 minutes prior to that. I was like, you are so funny, God. And it happened to be my sponsor ended up being back in town that day, and we sat there and we talked me through it. It took about an hour, but if it wasn't for this fellowship, I wouldn't have been, if I didn't reach out that day, I would have probably drunk. There's been a few times that I've had to be emotionally 12-stepped. It's because I don't know how to live without alcohol. My sponsor, you know, I call her as much as I can, and sometimes, like, I think I'm a baby, you know, like, God, I'm just calling her to complain. This is sad, you know. She's probably like, oh, God, it's Laura. So I reach out to other people. That's what I do. Because somebody's going to listen. Because somebody has felt this way, same as me. And that's what we do for each other, you know. Because if we didn't have each other, we wouldn't make it. I wouldn't make it. AA has taught me to has taught me to and is continuously teaching me to love myself. It's taught me to forgive others. I'm really big into the steps. When I got out, I wanted to do the steps ASAP. I wanted to get all this crap out. And I'm still getting all this crap out, you know. It's like kind of like Amanda said, you don't, you know, she's saying it's not probably the best that I could do. I mean, it's the best that you can do right now. you know, it's probably not the best steps that I did at that time, but it was the best that I could do at that time. When I have to forgive myself, which my fourth step, I was on the top of my resentment list. I was on the top, and I still am. I listed everything that I was mad about, but in the column, it was me. It's my fault. I've always felt guilty about everything. I could do better. I can do more. Because, like, I have this saying, too, of, like, I'm not going down. You know, like, you could totally beat me up. And then the next morning, I'm like, hey, guys, ready to go again? Like, I just can't get enough of it. You know, it's crazy. But it's also a good thing. It works in my favor because, you know what, I was able to be here, to reach out to you guys. And that phone is getting, this girl right here, Amanda, I'm in awe from her. You know, she has 8 months almost. And it's like, she's picked up the phone. She's reached out to people. She's speaking. She's like getting commitments. It's like, it's amazing to me. She should be my sponsor. It's true. It's true. You're teaching me so much. It took me 3 years to do all that sort of stuff. It really did. Finally to call somebody. Finally to get somebody's phone number, you know? It's hard for me to reach out. And what's so crazy is that I used to keep so much stuff in. And the only way to free myself is to let it out. And this year, I've been trying to do a little bit more. I'm trying to open myself up a little bit more to people, places, and things. Because I know that's what I got to do in order to grow. And that's what I got to do. I can't keep my guard up. But I'm afraid of everything. I'm afraid. I'm afraid that I'm going to be... I'm afraid that I'm not lovable. And I was talking to somebody the other day, and we talked about that. And that's how I feel a lot of the time. And in order to get past these feelings, which I hate, which I didn't even know I was having, I had to ask my sponsor, like, when I first was new, like, I'd call her up and I'd tell her what was happening. She's like, I said, my body's feeling weird. What is this? She's like, those are feelings. I had no idea, because what I did was I never had feelings. I would just drink. I would drink myself numb. I didn't know what these things felt like. And now all these feelings are popping up, and I don't know what feelings are about. And she's so sweet to me. You know, my sponsor is. She's amazing. You know, I'm three now, and she's still holding on to my bicycle with the training wheels. And she explains stuff to me, like, with the lemonade stand. You know, you, Laura, just imagine yourself at a lemonade stand. Okay, I'm like, oh, you're so sweet. Because I can't understand big concepts right now, you know? She breaks it down for me. I just want... sorry, just one moment. I feel like I'm on the phone. One moment, please. You know, I just I don't want anybody to feel the way I did. And if you do, reach out, because somebody's had these feelings before. You know, we'll be there for you. You guys were for me. A taught me how to forgive myself and others, and that was a huge freedom. It was a huge freedom, and it continuously teaches me to be a better person. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path, you know? If you thoroughly follow this path with willingness, you're going to make it. You stay in this fellowship. I have to. So today, ending out, I'd just like to pray for all of us to stay willing to do the work in this program so we can care for ourselves and live a better life. So thank you for letting me lead, Joseph, and... thank you, everybody. Laura Alcoholic.
Let's give both Amanda and Laura another hand.